And here we are on a Friday morning, first Friday in February. Imagine that, it's actually the first day of February, 2019, 15 minutes past the hour. You're tuned in to Over the Back Fence with Pastor Steve Whitaker and myself, Scott Spears. Pastor Whitaker, we are 31 days, 1/12 into 2019.
Wow, I guess we're into it, aren't we? It seems like it was yesterday that we celebrated the new year. But, you know, that's interesting how time just goes by and by. And I know before we went on, you just mentioned it was Jackie Robinson's 100th birthday. And, wow.
Yesterday. Can you believe that? Yesterday, Jackie Robinson would have turned 100 years old. And I was relaying to you that I don't buy many movies on DVD. Certainly not anymore with the digital age. But I went out and bought 42 when it came out because, and I'm not a big Harrison Ford fan, who I think was the headliner of that movie, but gosh, it was a good movie. And gosh, the Jackie Robinson story is the best part of that movie for people who haven't seen it. And it's been a while since I've seen it, but Branch Rickey. It's funny because there's a stretch of 23 people pass by and it says Branch Rickey Highway. And I don't think people know who that is or why that is that way.
Right.
And when that movie came out, I thought, well, more people are going to know what that's about now. But there's a sliver of that movie, and the whole movie's great. But Branch Rickey was the owner of the New York baseball team, which the first African-American to play in the major leagues was Jackie Robinson. That's why he was a big deal, and Branch Rickey brought him in. And they were getting ready to play the Pittsburgh team. And Branch Rickey and the Pittsburgh owner had been friends for who knows how long. And the Pittsburgh owner called up and said, if you bring Jackie Robinson with you to Pittsburgh with the New York team when they're going to play us in the upcoming week, we're not going to take the field. And Branch Rickey said, well, then I guess you'll forfeit the game. And he said, Why? The Pittsburgh owner said, why do you have such a burr about this whole thing? Why do you have to do this? Why can't you leave him home? Why can't you, you know, stop with this? And Branch Rickey said, do you think God likes baseball? And the guy said, why are you asking me that, the Pittsburgh owner? And Branch Rickey says, well, when you die one day, you are going to meet God. And when he asks you why your team didn't take the field against New York when Jackie Robinson was on the other side, do you think because he's an African-American will be a sufficient answer? And I love that part of that movie because I thought, how clever. How clever.
Kind of put me in mind when you're saying that. I saw recently that there's a group of high school players that are not players but schools that have said they will not play any Christian schools anymore because of the stance that some Christian schools take on certain moral issues, that they're not going to take the field with them. And I could ask that same question. When you're standing before God and he says, why didn't you take the field? Well, because we were going to have to play against Christians and we didn't believe in it. I don't know that I want to be there either. We've got to get past some of this stuff and realize that we, in many ways, there are times to take stances, and there's time to, if no one ever took a stance, this country wouldn't exist.
You know, the funny thing, but this is a great subject to get into, because racism, sexism, religious bigotry, it's interesting to me, because on the surface, it's just bad. It's just bad. But it's also interesting, because even if you believe in some bigoted way or misogynistic way, that what you are racist way, that that's the right way. Economically, it's just stupid. Because at the bottom of it, think of how much money was lost in the South because they wouldn't serve certain people. Think about women who couldn't work polls, couldn't vote before 1920, the money they would have spent. Think about teams that have a religious background, the people who would have came with them and bought concessions. It's economically stupid.
Yeah, and you know, it's kind of like, you know, I'll tell you, the ultimate stupid was, you know, when Germany decided to destroy some of the best businessmen and scientists and minds in the world through that unbelievable Holocaust. I mean, they rounded up some of the best and brightest and just destroyed them because that was not economically very smart, and it certainly never, and it proved out to be very economically wrong. But, you know, it's interesting that I truly believe that, you know, we do need to make a mark. You know, we need to be who we are. Nobody likes milquetoast. You ever notice that? And milquetoast people have a tendency to never make a mark. And sometimes some of the people that make the biggest mark, the first part of their life or the first part of why they're initially doing it, people aren't ready for that. But I think that a lot of times once you make that mark, you make a huge difference. You can make a real impact. A lot of times people are afraid, I think, of being called a troublemaker or, you know, I say it's great. Scott, those of you that don't know us out there, Scott and I probably, and there's areas that we completely differ in. Now, I'm not going to point them out because he doesn't point them out to me what they are, and I don't point them out mine either. But the truth is, we're sitting here talking. We have great conversations together, even off air, and it's because we have mutual respect for one another. And I think what we lose is that mutual respect. You know, it's really funny. We tell our children to play well together. But yet, as adults, we don't play well together. And just like the division of these sports teams that won't come together because, well, they believe this and they believe that. Now, if there's something illegal, immoral, nasty going on at a sports event, it's going to be called out and someone's not going to show up. I understand that. But when you do it over political or religious views in this country, that's a little bit extreme. What if somebody said that, you know, we have a school called Afrocentric in Columbus. What if somebody said, we're not playing Afrocentric because they obviously are racist because they think more about race than they do the common good between all men. Now, that would be something that people would just drop their, I can't believe you have that attitude. But see, we got to understand that it works the same way. I mean, the only way we're going to get to know each other is to know each other. Does that make sense?
Well, this is the thing, and I'll tell this story, and it's a strange one to tell, and some people might remember it, but it sparks in my mind. The answer to one of our trivia questions yesterday was Barbara Walters. And why this reigns supreme in my mind is, it's interesting because she, without question, and she's still with us, was the most well-known newswoman in the history of the business, I think still to this day. And nobody ever really mentions her when they're talking about bias in the news.
Because she didn't have a lot.
She didn't have it. But here's the thing. It's just odd the way things are. So this has nothing to do with Donald Trump as president. Because this is long before he was president. But Barbara Walters was a friend of Donald Trump's. They both lived in New York. She had interviewed him about things that went on in his life. She went to his wedding, matter of fact. They had been friends. And then she put Rosie O'Donnell on The View, and Rosie made some comments about Donald Trump. We all remember those. And Barbara got into a little scuffle during that whole thing because Donald Trump blamed her because it was her show. So they didn't speak for a while. And then, and again, this is prior, I think this is probably 2012, 2013. Donald Trump, back then it wasn't called the birther movement, but it was just, you know, he was asking for a birth certificate of President Obama. And I remember one day, Barbara Walters, who had always been so no bias, down the middle, and Trump was a friend, went to the wedding, like I say. She started the Live View one day, and she said, Donald, stop it. Because to her, that wasn't a political issue. To her, that was abhorrent. Now, whether it was or it wasn't, Barbara Walters felt it was. And all she said was, Donald, stop it.
But see, the thing was, those two knew each other well enough that she could do that.
She could.
She could do that. And, you know, most a lot of people may not know, because Barbara was so down the middle in her interviewing, that Barbara Walters is a very liberal, left-winging personal in her, from things she said. I'm aware of this, but you would never know that by seeing that interview. And she didn't treat people differently. Now, she may ask questions in an interview that would make them bring things out, you know, and even the thing with her and Donald Trump, they had been friends for so long. He was deeply offended by some things, and he was hurt. I'll give you an example, Scott. I'm on the show here with you, and I think we get along pretty well. If you had a guest on that was just trashing me up one side and down the other, and you didn't come to my defense immediately, I would probably take huge offense with you, like, wow, why didn't Scott do that? And I think that was probably part of it. But don't you kind of think so?
Well, I think so, but I also think this is... I don't think she would have done it had it been a political season. I don't think she would have done it if he was running for office. And to be honest with you, she interviewed him after that. So even he got over it.
They're still friends.
They're still friends. So the point of it was, in this conversation was, there was a point where that... To me, that wasn't a political issue, but she just saw it in right and wrong issues. And I'm not saying Barbara Walters was right. I'm just saying it was a moment in time where she stepped out of character, because that to her was an issue greater than the things that she had done in the past. And even with a friend of hers, you know, it wasn't a stranger. It's easier to criticize a stranger. But somebody who you might see at a party a week from now, that's a little more difficult to do. And to me, those are the stances. I may not agree with why you did it, but I have to admire the fact that you had the guts to do it.
Well, I have a solution for all those people that hear this stuff and see this stuff on the talk shows and on the media and all these kind of things. Get out a piece of paper, draw a line down, straight down the middle, from top to bottom. On one side, list your core values as American, what you believe in. And on the other side, list the values of people that you know in politics and the things that they support and don't support. Pay attention to your list and less attention to what you hear. Because I'll tell you what, there's so much spin on everything anymore that, you know, and it goes both ways. The spin's just unbelievable. But I think... I'm leading this into something. See, what I'm leading here into is something called personal responsibility. And I'm going to take that a bit further here this morning, if I could, Scott. And I want to talk about urgency and complacency. Those are two words that we don't like to talk about. Complacency is more common, and urgency no one wants because it rushes them. And what I bring up with that is that, Scott, don't you think that we seem to just float along every day and waste an awful lot of the time we've been given in life?
A lot of people do. I see some people, it's certainly not the majority, it's not even close to the majority, who do things above and beyond, but the numbers are much smaller than they've ever been, I think.
I think so. And I think that there's... you know, it's so easy just to take the day as it comes and just kind of get through it. You know, we all have our things that we do, our routine. You know, we get up typically at a certain time, we do certain things during the day, and then we eat at certain times, and we unwind and we go to bed. And in that period of time, we usually have about 12 hours of real activity, maybe 14, 15 of activity. And during that time, we can decide that we're either going to make a difference in that time, or we're just going to let it come and go. It's sad to see it come and go, because there's so much we can do in those hours. If you consciously put your mind to doing any task, most tasks you can do in a couple hours, you know, good things. Can you imagine multiplying that several times throughout the day and then doing it day after day, what you can accomplish? It's really interesting. When I was young, I was... involved in some with an investment group, and they talked about, you know, if you were 25 and you put X amount of dollars away a month, by this age you're going to be a millionaire. And, you know, to look at that small amount and look at that large amount, it was based on a certain interest rate and compound interest and all that fun stuff. And it's that principle still works today. But although the interest rates aren't as great, I'll tell you that. But my point being, it's the same thing with life. You know, it compounds. Those positive things we do every day compound. A lot of people say, you know, I don't go to church because I tried that. Well, you may have tried it for a couple of Sundays, but try living for God every day, and it compounds. I have to refocus all the time, Terry. Just yesterday, I was coming back from Grand Hospital. Was down there to see someone who had had surgery. And I'm on my way back, and really hit me some things that I needed to get right between me and God that may have slipped a little. And I just openly had a conversation with him about those things and things that I needed to reboot. And I think that we need to sometimes reboot. And when we reboot, begin again that challenge of every day saying tomorrow is going to be a day that I do things greater than I did the day before because I'm going to be intent on doing it. And through that, you find that life worthwhile, that life you're supposed to be living, because there's nothing more sad to me as a pastor to see someone in their, it usually starts about age 40 with some of these people. And by the time you see them at 55 or 60, their health is gone. Their desire for life is gone. They're negative about everything. And they're basically just laying around waiting to die. And we weren't put on this earth for that, Scott. And but there, it's the difference between urgency and complacency. I'm 60. I turned 60 in June, last June. And it struck me with an urgency that, you know, what if I got 10 really good years left? It could be less. I don't know. It could be tomorrow. But what am I going to do in that 10 years that's flying by quickly to really do everything that I can possibly do that when I leave this earth, I will have done what I was supposed to do while I was here?
You know, it's interesting because I had, I knew all my grandparents very well. They lived good long lives. And I know that two of my, well, at least three of them, did not really start to enjoy their life to a high extent until they were about 65. And they lived into their 80s, so they had a lot of good years. They had 15, 16, 17 good years. Some of them 20, they lived long. But there were events that happened that changed the way they had led their life. Number one was a lot of them retired, and they could finally do what they wanted to do with their time. Another thing was they didn't have little kids to take care of anymore. They'd all had that through a good portion of their life, and they didn't have to do that anymore. And they also were able to maintain friendships at that point because their friends were of the age that they were retired as well. So they could plan and do things and didn't have to worry about setting the alarm the next morning to get up. And the greatest parts of their life I saw were after age 65. That's when it started. That's when they really had a good
and
time.
And it can. You know, I say set the alarm. And the reason I say set the alarm is this, that, you know, if you're elderly, you're thinking, you know, what am I going to do? I don't have anything to do. Let me tell you something. There are so many things you can do. You can volunteer at senior centers. You can be greeters. You can go to, there's just so many different things that you can do. And there are social agencies that would love to have your help. And Council for the Aging and so many. It was kind of funny. A friend of mine, Frank Robinson, you've met Frank.
I have.
Frank works at it's not Council for Older Adults anymore. It's in Delaware. It's their senior center. I can't think the name of it. It's in Lewis Center. But anyway, he posted a picture the other day of them, all these people dancing and having a good time. And what they had done was, for a solid week, the people that couldn't afford to go to Florida and had to stay here in this cold weather, they were having a beach-themed week where every day they were doing things to make them feel like they were on a beach vacation. And these people were out there laughing and having fun and enjoying themselves. And, you know, even in the church, Scott, you know, we learn from our elderly. there's where the wisdom is. And for some reason, even with the elderly, they think they today they have a mindset that they get a certain age, I'm no longer relevant, so I don't need to do anything. You know, teaching kids is for the younger people. Teaching children's definitely for the younger people. I can't handle that anymore. The thing is, those are the ones that need you the most. And you need to be active, and you need to move in those roles. You're not going to be getting depressed. You're not going to, as we talked about a week ago, sit at home and get money sucked out of your purse from those guys on TV begging you for seed money. You know, you're going to be doing what you need to be doing, and you're going to have fulfillment in it. And that's so much more important. But it is very easy. It is so easy just to do the opposite. Isn't it easy to be lazy?
It is. Although, I do think that some people, I have seen people who are very driven, and I always wonder, are they driven just because they want to achieve, or are they driven because they're afraid of what will happen when they're not driven? Because there is a fear that if you are not busy every hour of the day, that there might be some things in your life that will depress you.
Oh, that's true too.
And I don't.
Very true.
To me, that's a little scary, because I've always advocated for senior citizens to keep working in some way, but I don't think you got to do a full time job.
No.
So, I don't think
you're capable in most cases.
Right.
I don't think our body winds down. You know, Scott, I take a nap every day. When I can, unless I'm really busy and it doesn't happen. And I know that my kids will get on me, Dad, you're not that old. You don't need a nap. But what they don't understand is, you know, when I get that refreshment from that, I jump up and I'm busy till 8 hours. I mean, that's kind of like a recharge for me. They see that because they never saw me take a nap when they were growing up. When the switch was on, it was on. And for a lot of reasons, I don't know what they all are, I get very tired at a point in the day where I just need, let me grab a half hour and reboot. And we do need, but we can still stay busy.
I think staying busy is a great thing. I worry sometimes about the people, because, you know, it's an interesting thing. I see a lot of, just because men do tend to die before women, and I see a lot of widows who take jobs doing things, or volunteer, because I think they're afraid to be home alone. That changed their life. And I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing that they're navigating it that way, but I do think you have to deal with it. So at some point, you have to deal with it. You can't run away from it. Because if you were staying home prior to your husband dying, and now you can't, it's fine to do something, but figure out what the can't is.
You know? I was talking to Greg Wilson yesterday morning before I headed down to Grand Hospital. Greg runs the gas station in Prospect, Ohio, the service station. And he was telling me that his mom's 91, and talked to her yesterday or the day before, and she had gone bowling with some friends that picked her up to go bowling. 91, isn't that great? You know, last week, the oldest lady in Delaware County passed away. Mrs. Taylor was 105 years old. Mm. Her son in his 80s, Lola, died a week earlier, and I think it was just some closure time for her. But she was sharp and alert and great, and, you know, there's a key to getting there. If you desire to be alive, you're going to live a lot longer than if you just don't care. And we do have to pay attention to things in our body when they're wrong and get them checked out. Things happen. But there's just so much more we can do. I love to see senior citizens active. I've got a dear friend, Jan Bradley. She goes to the church, and Jan is almost 80. She's not quite there. She's right close. And Jan has senior citizens, her friends. She calls them her people, that she checks on constantly and takes care of, and is checking in on them and doing this and keeping in contact with them and just staying so active doing those things. She's a very active at cooking in her house and making things and preparing meals for different things and all those things she does. but she stays so active. And when I see those people, I see such a difference in them. And we really need to realize that, you know, there is an urgency to life in a point, because we spend the first half of our life reaching for the next year because we want to meet a mark, or maybe we just do it through 20, I don't know. But it seems like we spend the next two-thirds of our life, or if it goes up to it, anyway, we spend at least the next half of our life watching these years click off like faster and faster and faster. And slow down. You know how you slow down? You get busy and you find marks to meet and you do those things. Quit worrying about the next day so much. Quit compiling your life with things that don't matter. I know a couple that when they were just about retirement age, went into debt for a huge house that they couldn't afford. Why do people do that? Isn't it time to simplify, to slow down a little bit? What can I get rid of? What do I really need? And I'm at that point now. My kids been telling me that. I've been there for years. But I'm having to keep telling myself, okay, don't do this. You don't need that. It's just going to compound your life. And it's time sometimes that we look at what's really important. Reconnect with family that maybe you've lost connection with. That's a huge one today. Put grudges aside. Who are those grudges hurting you? That's exactly who they're hurting, because they're usually not hurting the person that you have a grudge against, because they've moved on. Put those grudges aside. They're not important. You know, Terry, I don't know of one person in this world that I don't want to see one day in heaven. Because I don't think anyone, I want to see anyone in the alternative. And we've got to learn to love our fellow person. We've got to do it.
Well, I would be hard-pressed to find somebody that I really disliked. Now, I'm not to say that I have not disliked actions that they've done, but I don't spend much time on it, because I say, oh, okay, well.
I kind of pity nasty people, don't you?
Well, yeah, because I always wonder where it comes from. That's the first thing. It's funny how life works, because a lot of people will not say something nasty to you. They'll say something nasty to somebody else about you. But more or less, it'll get back to you at some point.
Try being a pastor.
Yeah. Yeah, I imagine. And when it gets back to you, the first thing I always think is, wonder what propelled that? Because I may not have seen this person. What did I do that bothered them so much? Because I really do believe all negative things, because I guess my philosophy on negative things is, I think all negative things come out of some bit of envy. Because the truth of the matter is, right now I could say 15 negative things about 15 people, but I choose not to, because I don't understand what that's going to do for me.
But you know, let me ask you a question, Scott. I think I was listening on a show, and it may be somewhere else. I listen to so much stuff, I get confused. But there was a comment made that when you say something nasty to someone that has no skin in the game, all you're trying to do is get that person to dislike that other person.
That's
too.
It. And that's what I think...
Is that you that said that?
It was either... I think it was I or Satch. Okay. That was the conversation we had the other day. But I think it's interesting, because I do believe it, to the degree that even if it's true, and 90% of the time it's not, but even if it's true, why did you do it? What was the point in doing it? And that's what I wish people did. And a lot of people don't do this. The mediary, the person it's being told to, doesn't look back and say, why? Why are you doing this? You know, nobody is that protective of other people. Nobody, I'm a stranger and you wanted to protect me? You just all that you're a wonderful Cape Crusader.
You're wanting them to dislike this person.
Absolutely,
which is negative, and you should. You know, I did something interesting. I'm gonna spill the beans right now because you're the first person I've told. Yesterday, I went onto Facebook, and I went to my profile, and I went down through all of my posts, and I systematically deleted everything I had posted over the last week or so. I didn't go back any further than that. And the only thing I have posted on that site since was the story of a missing child, which I think is important. But I decided that on my church page or on Pastor Spot, I want to post positive things that are going to help people grow in life and go out in there and do great things. And the problem is coming to a realization of posting things that are very strongly opinionated, even though they're correct and I believe the opinion would be right. I'm preaching to the choir because those people that are going to be friends of mine typically are in agreement anyway. So what am I even doing it for other than just to do it? So why even do it? And I would rather go blank and go in the dark than just continually keep feeding the fodder. Does that make any sense?
Well, it does, because honestly, I mean, I'm on Facebook. It's how people communicate nowadays. But the truth of the matter is, you could go through my scroll. I very rarely share anything. If I do share something, it's maybe that somebody had died, a news story or something like that. You will never find an opinion on anything that would be controversial. Now, the other day, I gave an opinion of a mechanic because I thought they did good work.
Yeah, I thought that was
praise. But you will never find me comment on anything that's controversial giving my opinion, because to me, I is irrelevant. I know how I feel, so I have to tell you how I feel. I don't understand.
I think most people know how I feel, so I probably shouldn't have to tell them, should I?
Right, and that's what I've come to the realization of. And the truth of the matter is, being in the media this long, truthfully, people misjudge how I feel a lot. Now, that's not going to make me race out and tell you how I truly feel, but it's an interesting thing. If I can stay that, how should I put it, much of an enigma, good. Because if you come at me, for example, if I say A, and you come at me and believe that I am B, then I say, good. You know, that's okay. Everybody's allowed to have their own opinion. And that's why I don't do it.
Well, and I think with myself, too, I think that, you know, we do have the Community Christian Fellowship page, the church page, and we have the pastor spot. I have that. And but you know, to put things on there that are going to help people grow, that are going to turn them back to the Word of God, I'd rather God teach them than me anyway. But, you know, have a devotion on there. I love putting things out there that are really a positive word. And some of those things are reposts. You know what I mean? Like it'll be something really positive or warm. Or I love nostalgic things. I don't mind reposting that stuff. I think they're wonderful. But, you know, a lot of the stuff that's going on, it's just like I said, I think most people that are friends of mine know where I stand anyway, so why do I need to just keep hammering it and hammering it and hammering it? You know, if I told a friend of mine the other day as we were talking, I said, you know, where we're at in this world today, the only thing that I feel that we can do that's the right thing is to do the best thing. And that means, in my case, that would mean constantly reaching out to people, showing them the love of Christ, sharing with them the truth, and getting them to understand that relationship with Christ. And that's a way, to me, that we're going to better the world. It's not going to be through drawing these hard lines and fighting and spitting back and forth. Because no one's ever going to come through hatred. You know, one thing interesting, if you study Jesus and his teaching, one thing that he did was he called out the Pharisees, and he called out those that were false and fake and phony, that were... Jesus was offended when people claimed to do things in God's name that weren't. That was the ultimate offense to him. When they used it for their own personal gain, that's when they were called out. That's when he was really upset. And he would call out some immorality and things of that issue. But you never saw him trying to cause a war between the Jews and the Greeks. You never saw him trying to cause a war and going after, oh, those rotten Persians in the past, or you know, in the old, you know, you didn't hear it. You know, it was about, look, I'm the light of the world, and here I am, and this is what's bad about sin and ugliness, and I've come to give you forgiveness for that, and we need to, love is so important that we love one another, and we're truthful and we're honest about the truth. And that there is an ultimate truth. And when we get ahead of, beyond that and start getting all partisan, you know, when Jesus went to trial under Pilate, that you noticed that he didn't have any lawyers, or he didn't have a group on his side that stood up and there was this huge fight back and forth. He had his humble followers that stayed back. But it was because he never got political. If he had gotten overly political, which they were afraid he was going to do, and that was one of the main reasons they took him to the cross. If he had gotten political, he would have had an uprising on two sides fighting each other. And I don't think that, I think that we're catching ourselves up in political things, where we need to be catching ourselves up in love and personal things and loving one another. You know, I don't care what you are. I don't care what color. I've never cared what color people were. This whole racial thing's got to go away, and it has to go away on both sides. It really does. I mean, we're people. Why is it that we can come together face to face, black and white, and laugh and joke and talk and say we're going to pray for one another, but then when you get divided off into your own circles, you know, it goes completely the other direction. You know, that's the type of hypocrisy, I think, that God talked about.
You know, it's interesting when we talk about race, because the two things that jump out in my mind, one thing that always kind of sends a chill up my back, is if two people are having a conversation about race, no matter what the two races are, if they are saying this person is a racist or so on and so forth, I hate when that person says, I'm not. Some of my best friends are blah, 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 blah. And I
it's a defense.
Yeah, because I'm not sure. I understand it's a defense, but I'm not sure why that is a good defense.
I think it's a good defense. Well, I see why it's a pertinent defense. And the reason I say that is because when someone calls you a racist, they're saying that you don't like me just because of the color of my skin. And I think that person's response is, that's false, because if that was true, I wouldn't have these friends.
Well, I think that I put that in other situations, though. Like, if I believe somebody was misogynist, was against women, and I said, I think you're trying to hold women down, and their response was, I'm married, I don't necessarily know that would defeat...
But that's different. I don't think that's apples and apples.
Well, I don't know, because I think you can work with people of a different race. You can be friends with them. But it might... Race is, in a lot of ways, for a lot of different reasons, systematic. If somebody called me a racist, I would just say, I'm not. I wouldn't feel like... You know, here's what it comes from. To be honest with you, here's why I don't like that defense. Because a lot of people tell a lot of false stories. And the defense I always hear is, when they tell me something that is not true, and I say, that's not true. I know that's not true. And they say, well, go ask this person. They'll tell you it's true. Now, the first thing that pops in my head, now, you are trying to tell me what you said was true. Now, obviously, you did not pick a person who's going to say that you're false. You wouldn't go to that because you're trying to prove a point. And that's where I always see the race thing, is that you wouldn't go to that. You're trying to prove your point. If you aren't, you aren't.
I'll go back to something you said about Barbara Walters a few minutes ago you brought up about. Remember when she told, when you said she told Donald Trump about the birther thing? Donald, stop it.
Yeah, that was it.
Well, I want to say something loud and clear about the race issue. Black, white, stop it. And that's all I'm going to say about it, because here's the problem. Just stop it. I mean, this constant thing of trying to prove people are racist or they're not racist is a ridiculous argument to begin with. Just personally, yourself, stop it. And, you know, to constantly be harping on someone and calling other people racist is being a racist. Do you realize that?
Well, here, the interesting thing
is
this.
It's nuts.
Well, I'll tell a personal story, and it's been in recent times. I did an interview. I'm going to be as vague with this story as possible. I did an interview, and somebody listening did not like that interview. And they sent letters to churches saying I was a racist. Now, churches I had never been to. I had never met the pastors.
Oh, they'll do that.
Right. Now, the interesting thing of it, I didn't go to the churches and defend myself, and none of them ever came to me. Because they either didn't care what the
file 13, brother.
Yeah, that's what I think happened. And that's what I feel. I didn't feel I needed to go to them and say, look who my friends are. I didn't feel I needed to come on the air and defend myself and say, I'm not this, I'm not that. I know who I am, and you can say what you want.
I think most churches and church organizations think if something's not willing to be put in an open forum for discussion, it goes in the trash. Because you cannot base your actions or opinion based on a letter from someone that was so gutless they sent it in the first place and didn't talk to the person directly involved. And you know, the thing is that, you know, like it's very hard for those of us. I was talking to a businessman in one of our smaller towns around here. A few years ago. It wasn't Prospect where I'm from, but it was in a smaller town. And he said that he really, really took offense to being called a racist because he lived in small-town rural America. He said, I've never had a chance. He goes, I got to be honest with you. I've never had a chance to be a racist because there really aren't any black people living in my town. Now, quite frankly, I'd welcome them. It wouldn't bother me. They're just like me. I don't have any opinion one way or the other. But to tell me that I'm against them because, he said, how can I be against something I've never even known or been around? And we've got to stop this at the highest level. Our government at the highest level is tossing around this racial term so much and using it for political fodder that's where the healing can begin. You know what I mean? Quit trying to use it to divide us and stop dividing us. Granted, are there different racial groups in our country that are having difficult times? Why does no one ever talk about the Irish that were held into slavery for so long in this country and what they went through? They don't. Because why is it that maybe the Japanese have been accepted, or the Chinese, or the even Latin Americans? You know, we're trying to create a new group that we hate called Latin Americans and bring them into the racial question. You know, I love Latin Americans. I mean, I think everyone, I don't know anyone that dislikes a Latin American. And you know, to try and bring it into a race thing for political things, I think, okay, here I go. Barbara Walters 101. Folks, stop it. Just stop it.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, it's a tough thing to deal with because I have talked to people who I've interviewed people, and I think this interview that I did was why it spurred this. Clearly, he had some problems. It was not a politician, but clearly he had some problems with other races. And I'm not even talking about black white here. I'm talking about people. I remember I had a guy on who was a Holocaust denier. Now, that was not political at all. Zero politics in that at all. But he was a Holocaust denier. Now, I can understand how somebody who is Jewish might take offense to that. Now, even though the majority of people believe the Holocaust happened, even though I'm sure the Jewish person who was listening knows that the Holocaust happened, it still is bothersome, I think, that there are people who have that mindset. Because I don't believe a Holocaust denier really denies the Holocaust. It's hatred.
Interesting, Scott. I had I did some part-time things here and there. And I was working with a fellow one day, an older fellow, and I never knew this about him. All of a sudden, he starts talking, and I realize not only is he anti-Semitic, but to the point where he said he had no problem with the Palestinians slaughtering as many as they could. And I thought, where are you nuts? I mean, where do people even come up with this stuff?
And that's the interesting thing. So it's different. Racism, anti-Semitism, misogynism sometimes are not always overt. It's not the person. It's not Archie Bunker. It's not somebody who's right in your face.
Hey, if you're a misogynist, you want to get over it, start reading the Word of God, because nobody held a woman up to a more beautiful place than our God did. I'll just give you that.
Well, I say it's... Yeah, as we get to... But it is interesting in this country, though, that there are instances when people go back over our history where it took longer for some groups to get... And women were the last group to get the right to vote. So it's interesting. Now, people can say that it just didn't happen. I mean, we're not even 100 years yet. And it didn't. I don't know. I wasn't there 100 years ago. But it's interesting to look at as to why it didn't happen, why it has taken... If you take the time the country was born till the time they got the right to vote and the time they got the right to vote till now, it's less time now. We're still closer to them getting the right to vote than it was.
But you know what? It's over with.
It is over
with. That was yesterday. It's over with.
Right, but I do think that there are instances where the hatred that is behind that maybe kept that, is still there.
I don't.
You think it's all gone?
I think it's retired, dead, and gone. And I think that we bring up way too much of the past. You know, I brought this up before. You know, I look at the Jewish people. Never a more persecuted people in the world than the Jewish people.
That's true.
And never, ever. And within 75 years ago, 6 million of them were slaughtered. The anti-Semitic jokes have never stopped. I heard them all growing up. I still hear them. But yet... They have rose up and said, we're not paying attention to our past. We're moving to the future. And that's been the mindset. And they've succeeded as a people and a nation because that's been their mindset. Well, and I just heard a thing the other day that I read a thing, and I hope that it's true, and I saw it on the news, that they're claiming that they have a cancer cure that's going to be viable. You know, their scientists are moving ahead. My point is, we've got to put the garbage behind us and reach for the light in front of us. It's got
to
happen.
I think so. I think we have to look forward, but... It's interesting, the things that have gone on. But we've reached the end of our rope today.
We have.
We've reached it. Now, this show will repeat on Sunday morning from 9, 10 till 10 a.m. And then on Tuesday evening from 6, 10 to 7 p.m. And Pastor Whitaker's other show, The Pastor Spot, will repeat Sunday morning, 8, 10 to 9 a.m. And then live next Tuesday, 5, 10 to 6 p.m. It's always a pleasure.
It's always a pleasure, and Scott, I just would like to invite everyone to our church, Community Christian Fellowship at 209 East Water Street in Prospect. God bless you. Have a good one.
Thomas Lawn Service for all your lawn care and landscaping needs. Telephone number 740-